Nielsen ranked number one. Melissa in the Morning, WICC 600. From Stamford to Norwalk and in your own neighborhood, it's Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
I want to thank all of you so much, everyone who reached out and shared incredible words of encouragement and your condolences and your faith and everything to try and pull through the loss of my grandmother last week. It was very unexpected for our family, and we're still really trying to even kind of wrap our minds around the reality of it. It's very numbing, and it's very confusing. It's very unsettling. And I know that we're just in the beginning phases of the grieving process. But it's interesting because I think the pandemic has introduced a whole new world of grieving, because there are aspects of losing somebody to COVID or losing someone during the pandemic that has introduced challenges that we've really never seen in most cases before. And a lot of you reached out to me personally after my announcement yesterday and said, we need to talk about grief. We need to talk about this in length. We need to talk about how do we do it? How long is it appropriate to be grieving somebody? How do you do it during a pandemic when it seems like you're kind of shut out from everything right now? So Julius Dudix is actually here early this morning, and he's going to do a two-part session on grieving this morning. And Julius, I so appreciate you being here to talk about this. How are you?
Good, Melissa. Thanks for having me on, and let me offer my condolences. I'm sure I speak for the listeners as well. We care about you. We love you. We're going to support you and continue to think and pray for you.
Well, I really appreciate that, Julius. Thank you so much. And I know my family does as well, so thank you. And I think the first part of this conversation that I want to just dive into, first of all, is, you know, is it, you know, how long is it okay to grieve somebody's passing? Because it changes for people. It varies for people. But how long is it okay to grieve over somebody?
That's a great question. And really, you're hit the nail on the head. It varies for everybody. There are some who have written 6 months to 2 years. But you could never, ever, ever just say, if you're not done grieving in 2 years or 18 months or 36 months, you're not doing well. Really, the question becomes, how are you doing in the process? And is the grieving controlling your quality of life? And that's where you need to move toward the acceptance. And I always tell clients, you know, go through it, feel it, understand, try to understand it. But you're done grieving when you're done grieving. However, you have to deal, and some people never get over it, and that's, they carry it for years and years and years, and it manifests in forms of behavior that they don't really understand because they've never really dealt with a loss. But basically, you know, you're done grieving when you're done grieving. There's no time frame. It's individual for everybody. So, yeah.
What about for the people, Julius, who didn't get to have closure? So, you know, in some ways, I definitely feel this was, you know, look, my grandmother was 89 years old, just to use her as an example. She was 89 years old. She had health issues for quite some time, but she was still very mentally with it. She had all of her faculties. She died exactly the person I've known her to be my whole life. She just had a lot of physical ailments that she was dealing with. That being said, though, because of COVID, she died in the hospital, and they only allowed two immediate family members to be there. And of course, my mom and her brother were the ones who went. So like my siblings and I, my dad, my husband, you know, none of us got to see her technically before she died. We FaceTimed her, but there's this weird, eerie, like I never in my life. I mean, I could tell you, Julius, for years, my family and I, we talk about it. We would always say, when Graham Cracker goes, it's going to be rough. It's going to be awful because she's such a huge part of our lives. She's lived with us for 24 years, and none of us expected that we wouldn't have, you know, that closure. We wouldn't have been able to touch her face and kiss her one more time and tell her I love you, like in person to her face and be there. So I think a lot of people are in that place, Julius, where they didn't get to have the closure that they really wanted. So I think the grieving process is probably a little bit different than we've seen before the pandemic, no?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. And you know, it is difficult because it is so hard. It's another layer of guilt. I can't be by the bedside of the one I love so much. Mm-hmm. And that's not why my hats go off to all of the healthcare workers who are day in and day out caring for those and helping people like yourself, perhaps through FaceTime stay connected that way. But specifically for you, Melissa, what can you do? What can people do when they're in that situation?
Right.
Well, they could perhaps connect with other people, coordinate a date, a time, perhaps for family members to get together and perhaps honor them by creating some kind of maybe a virtual memory book or a blog or a web page.
Oh, I like that.
Or maybe even plant a tree in her honor. I've known families to do that before, where you plant a dogwood tree in honor of the loved one. But the whole point is to unite the family, and this should be a uniting time when everybody comes together and stays connected. To isolate is the worst thing you can do during a time of grief like this.
So like pushing people away and just staying to yourself, that's like the worst thing you could do.
Yeah, you know, you really want to. There's some times when you need to be alone, and that's alone time is good. But by and large, you're going to need people, a network of people around you, friends, relatives, and so forth, to share pictures, stories, emails, phone conferences that you've had with your grandmother or whatever, and just kind of unite as a family. It should be a time of supporting and encouraging one another.
Mm-hmm. Talking to Julius Dudix this morning, and a pretty big topic, and that's grief. In fact, a lot of you reached out asking if we could talk about that, because the pandemic has really presented, like we said this morning, more than 5,000 people just in Connecticut who have died from COVID. And unfortunately, that accounts for a lot of your family members, your parents, your grandparents, and in some cases, even younger than that. So we are actually going to keep Julius Dudix here on the show for the next few minutes. He's actually going to be here actually through till the 7:30 hour as well. And we're going to continue talking about the grieving process. How do we do it? How do we effectively continue to move on, but also not forget the people that we have lost during the pandemic? So we're going to talk about that coming up still on the show this morning.
If it's happening in Sono, Rowayton, or anywhere in Norwalk, Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
We are diving into part two of grieving during COVID, and it's something that a lot of you wanted to talk about because you've dealt with it maybe personally, or you have friends who have lost people during the pandemic or from COVID, and you wanted to talk about the grieving process. I know our family is going through that right now with the passing of my grandmother last week. So Julius Dudix is back, our counselor on the morning show. And Julius, I wanted to pick up from where we were talking before. We were talking about how the pandemic has kind of presented a new version of grieving, because most people don't get closure if their loved ones die in the hospital or a nursing home, for example, and they can't even go and see them in person. So kind of piggybacking that, how are we supposed to deal with lingering questions after death? And I think this is something that anybody deals with, but I think COVID brings it to another level. You know, do you question, like, did I do enough? Did I, you know, did we cause this? Did, you know, could I have protected this person better? Could I have advocated for this person better? Did doctors really do everything they could to save them? I think a lot of people have those common questions after death, especially during the pandemic. How do you deal with them when you're not going to get those answers, essentially?
Yeah. Thanks for having me on, Melissa. Yeah, those are great questions. And I would do just that. I would make a list of some of the questions that you may have about the grieving process. But there are so many online helps to grief. There's griefshare.com. I don't know if your listeners are aware of that, but those are localized sessions. I know in a COVID environment it's difficult. Perhaps I'm sure they've got some type of a Zoom app where you can join a group that way. But you've got to give yourself permission to grieve and admit and acknowledge and discuss it. But ultimately, Melissa, I think people want to know why. And there's something about knowing why things happen that'll make us feel better. But at times, sometimes you're never going to know. And so you need to accept and trust and realize that the answer may not come for days or months or even decades concerning mm-hmm. that. Why did this happen? But that's a common question. Mm-hmm. I always encourage my clients to let go of the pain that they've attached to the loved one. Because the bottom line is, if you let go of the pain, you're not betraying the loved one. And the length of the grief is not reflective of the depth of love you have for them. And that's where some clients get a little bit mixed up. And I always tell them to learn to celebrate the thousands of days that you have with the individual, as opposed to the one day that they've died. And if you fixate on that one day, you're going to be depressed. So the whole process is to really, really kind of move forward in acknowledging your pain, accepting that grief can trigger a certain amount of emotions and understand that the grieving process is going to be unique for everybody, for you. To be honest with how you feel, to write down questions, but to know that you may never get the answer. And a lot of it relates to your relationship with God. And people have cried out to God and say, God, why? God, why? And they blame God. Nobody really knows why COVID hit. And when you don't understand what you don't know about God, understand what you do know about God, that he's loving and he's kind and he's compassionate. We choose to believe what we want to believe. And from my perspective, my Christian-based counseling practice is based on the idea that you're never going to know everything about God. But when you don't understand what you don't know about God, understand what you do know about God. He loves you, and he's there for you. And the Bible is filled with promises about how he'll never leave us, he'll never forsake us. He's always there for us.
Mm-hmm. And it also sounds like when it comes to moving on or moving forward, a lot of it is your mindset, like you were saying. It's focusing on the days that you did have, the memories, the laughs, the videos, the voicemails that you do have from that person versus that one day where you last saw them, or, you know, the last day you heard their voice and then they were gone. And I think if you're able to sort of change your mindset and work with what good you do have from that person, it seems like that also is like a helpful tool to be able to move forward and to carry them, you know. And it kind of makes me think as well, Julius, and I don't know your thoughts on this, but I think, you know, years and years, decades ago, you know, it was a big deal to go and visit burial grounds. You know, like I remember being a kid, and my grandparents and my parents would, you know, bring us literally to go see my great grandparents or to go see my grandparents and put a flag on their grave. And I still think that that's kind of a generational thing that you do that you're supposed to be buried with your family. But it was interesting with my grandmother's death, and I don't know if it's because COVID kind of prompted this, but my mom, who has tremendous guilt over her decision, which she shouldn't, she decided to cremate my grandmother because for two reasons. One is that, you know, we just don't feel like doing just a burial, you know, of just a couple of us. It just doesn't seem to suffice. But the other part of it, too, that I would love for you to touch on is she's bringing my grandmother home so she can sit where family gathers and where we celebrate holidays and where we have dinners and where we have conversations and where we're going to continue to see our families grow with more kids and more grandchildren. And she can be a part of it, even though she's not really here. It's like she stays alive almost. Like it's that idea of she's still with us, even though she's not physically here. And I didn't know if you wanted to touch on that at all, like how you could keep people's spirits alive, even if they're not physically with you.
Yeah, there's a psychological attachment in that case, in that regard. And I understand that. And one of the things that we have to be careful of is not to judge or criticize, but to allow your mom to do what she feels comfortable doing. Mm-hmm. And I believe have the family surround her and almost support her and encourage her. As long as what she's doing is safe, and as long as she's not debilitated by negative thought, the bottom line is to create unity within the family. And a lot of times a tragedy, a crisis will do that. Mm-hmm. But your mom, it sounds like she just needs to have that presence there for her for a while. But ultimately, your mom's going to have to let go. And that's mm-hmm. a difficult thing. And she may never let go. You know, she may hold on to this for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. But the issue is to help her to sort out, you know, why does she feel the way she feels? Why is she doing what she's doing? And how can she best help herself in terms of her own mental health and moving forward?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, too, you know, that it's something that, you know, even us as kids, I think we're a very spiritual family. My parents all the way down. My grandmother was actually a very, very strong woman of faith. It's funny, but every single person that has talked about her personally brings up that she's definitely at peace. She's definitely in heaven because she was such a woman of God. It was amazing.
Sure.
You know, and I think, you know, my mom, my dad, all of us, we know she's in heaven. There's really no question of that. It's amazing though, Julius, that it's not the people who pass, you know, like ceremonies and funerals and wakes are really not for the people who pass on. Like, they're really for the living. It's really for people, like you said, to bond and to talk about this person and to keep their spirit with us. So, you know, what would you say for the people who maybe rely on funerals or rely on wakes, but right now that's really not possible? You could have 10 people indoors at one gathering, and that may be, you know, like, that's even too little for our immediate family. So what do you recommend for people if they can't do the funerals or can't do the wakes? How do they kind of cope?
Yeah, well, I'm a huge advocate of journaling your feelings, but in this particular COVID environment, you can host a conference call. You can do a Zoom session where you plan out a Zoom service for the individual. You can have people send in different pictures or so forth, or make a memory book or something, or a web page even, to create some type of memories and stories of the individual. And again, I think I mentioned it in the initial hour. To plant a tree for the individual in their memory would be a wonderful thing in a COVID environment that you can do. But you can utilize the internet in a lot of ways, or utilize conference phone calls to help people express their grief and express their memories. And you can almost do a service, an online service, where people are able to share a little bit. And if they prepare in advance, that's even more powerful. Then what you could do is you make a recording of it and you can share it with family members. Mm-hmm. But Melissa, the key is to stay unified and don't let the tragedy cause division, because that's exactly what you don't want to happen in a family. You don't want to be divided. You want to be united. And I always tell people that tragedy will either, you bow your knee to the trial, or you bow your knee to a God who is there for you and who loves you. And it's mm-hmm. either going to create one or two responses. So I always encourage people to rely heavily on their faith and kind of move forward that way.
Yeah, I think that's exactly kind of our mindset at this point as well. Julius, you have been incredibly helpful, incredibly honest, and we so appreciate it. How can people reach out to you directly if they want to talk a little bit more, maybe about their situation in particular, or they want to get more information?
Sure. You can find me on BARK, www.bark.com. or Facebook or LinkedIn, or you can even Google non-judgmental Christian counseling, or 203-243-7714 is the line for my counseling center.
Julius, thank you so much. We so appreciate having you on this morning for extra time. Take care.
God bless you, Melissa. We'll be thinking of you. Have a good day.
Thanks, you too. And going forward, especially with what the pandemic has done, and in my research of trying to find someone to come on and talk about Giving Tuesday and really where we should be putting our money and our resources locally, I stumbled on Fairfield County Trauma Response Team. Now, I'm going to be honest, I did not really know anything about this group at all, but I did a little bit of research, and I learned that this group of volunteers, they have their mission is to develop and maintain a team of licensed clinicians who can provide EMDR interventions. Now, if you've never heard of EMDR, I hadn't either. It's called eye movement desensitization and reprocessing therapy. I had never heard of that, but it's being able to provide that as part of a frontline trauma response and recovery when needed, especially to deal with PTSD, which I can't think of a better time to talk about this. A lot of people are going through PTSD just from dealing with COVID on the front lines. But even before that, this has been a real concern for our firefighters, our police officers, our EMT workers. PTSD is so serious. And I think what this group is doing is extraordinary. And joining me to talk a little bit more about this is one of the board of directors. Dawn Roy is here with the Fairfield County Trauma Response Team. Dawn, thank you for coming on this morning. I appreciate it. How are you?
I'm good, Melissa. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you for being here. So first of all, Dawn, what even drew you to be part of this group? How long has this group been around?
We've been around since 2011. And what drew me is actually a very personal connection. My husband is a firefighter. He's been with the City of Stamford Fire Department for about 27 years.
Wow.
And so this hits me very personally. And this organization was really born out of a tragedy. Most people in Fairfield County will remember that awful Christmas Day in 2011, where there was a fire that claimed the lives of three young children mm-hmm. and their two grandparents. And my husband, along with approximately 70 other firefighters with the department, was there that day, and unfortunately, they being the firefighters, did not receive the support from a mental health perspective that they really needed. And
wow.
So it takes a lot for firefighters to call for help, and unfortunately, people in the mental health world were not available for them that day. And so myself and a number of my colleagues developed this organization really to never let something like that happen again. And so it's personal for me as well as professional.
Yeah. Well, I mean, first and foremost, I thank your husband and the dozens who responded to that fire. I remember it very well.
Yeah.
it was horrible. And I know even working at News 12 Connecticut for a few years, gosh, we covered that story so in depth, as did every other news outlet. And it is tragic. It's one of, I would think, one of Connecticut's worst moments. That was absolutely horrible. So I can only imagine. I just know as a news reporter being on scene of things, it's hard to honestly. I always think one of the hardest things to watch as a reporter is how first responders have to be so stoic and they've got to handle these situations. And you know, this is them clocking into their job and handling what's in front of them. But then they do clock out at some point. And you're right, Dawn. I don't know if we do enough to support our frontline workers, our first responders, and really take into account what they see and what they endure most days while they're on the job. And I love that this group at least has come together and recognizes that. So I have to be honest, I apologize if I seem ignorant. I don't really know much about this EMDR therapy. So has that been around for a while? Like, what is that about? Does it really work? Like, has your husband used it?
And my husband has used it. I'm always amazed. It feels to me like the best kept secret. You know, I know whenever I hear somebody saying they've never heard of it, I think to myself, oh my gosh, that in and of itself is such a tragedy. It's been around since 1987.
Really?
And,
wow.
Oh my gosh. It is global. We have EMDR therapists that do that work and that are trained to do this work throughout the world. Literally, there are clinicians in Israel and so many other countries. We have upwards of 200 EMDR clinicians in the state of Connecticut. And my husband, in fact, it was the only thing that worked. He tried traditional talk therapy and it did not work for him. And so I really encouraged him because I am an EMDR trained therapist myself and I know the power of it. And I said to him, you have to do this. Please do this, because I knew he was suffering and our family was suffering as a result. And luckily, many of those firefighters I know personally have gone on from his department and have done EMDR, and they cannot say enough about it.
Wow.
So you asked me again, like, what is it? It is known typically as a trauma-based treatment, but mm-hmm. it has evolved over the years to be used with many other types of mental health disorders. And oftentimes there's a trauma base to some of the things that people are struggling with. So it could be depression, anxiety, or substance use disorders. And basically what happens for many people when they go through a traumatic event or a disturbing experience is that that trauma is stored in the brain and in the body in a way that is not healthy or adaptive.
Right.
And so it's held with a lot of different senses, including a thought, like if you go through a particular experience, and we'll use that fire as an example, you know, maybe somebody said, you know, thought like I didn't do enough or I failed, something along those lines. But the other things that are in a trauma have to do with a smell or an image or a sound, you know, the sound of a screaming mother, you know, to save her children, for example.
Wow.
And so we store that and it we go on, but it doesn't, we then can become symptomatic where we can relive those things. You know, for my husband, it was a particular color where he could not get an image out of his mind.
Oh my gosh.
And every time he saw that color going forward, he would get triggered. And so
wow.
through the power of EMDR, and I won't get into all the clinical pieces of it, but two sessions, that was it for him. And he was no longer symptomatic. He was able to sleep and his mood drastically changed.
I want to dive into this more, Dawn, if you don't mind staying on the line.
Okay.
I think this is incredibly fascinating, and I think you're right. I mean, I feel even like ashamed as a reporter that I've never really heard of this therapy before, and I feel like a lot of my listeners probably haven't either. So stay with us. Dawn Roy is here, and we're so excited to continue talking about Fairfield County Trauma Response Team and the work that they do. That's coming up in just a couple of minutes. And we're continuing our conversation now with Dawn Roy of Fairfield County Trauma Response Team. And if you're just tuning in, we were talking about how this group of clinicians, they're providing what's called EMDR interventions as part of a trauma response for our frontline workers, our first responders, firefighters, police officers, EMTs, people who are going through PTSD. And we were just talking about eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. That's what EMDR stands for. It's a type of therapy. Now, can you actually, Dawn, kind of walk us through, if you don't mind, like, what does this therapy look like? You said your husband went through two sessions and was basically much better. So help us to understand, like, what do you go through when you're in one of these therapy sessions?
So the clinician works with the client to set up we use the term target, but what is the, I'll just say that, target as to what it is that you're going to work on. And within that target, you are looking at an image that's associated with a target, a negative belief, and the disturbance level, like how strong on a 0 to 10 scale is the incident or issue. And then what is like a negative belief, as I mentioned, that a person holds with that particular issue. And as I said, like maybe I failed or I didn't do enough or something along those lines. And we use what is called bilateral stimulation, which activates the right and left side of the brain. And so whether that's eye movements or tactile, holding some buzzies in your hand, these tappers we have, or even auditory right left sounds. And it's some people like to think of it as magical, but it really is a brain based treatment. And using the bilateral stimulation, it helps the person be able to process or digest or reprocess, in fact, the traumatic event, and it moves it from a place in the brain and in the body to that's negatively stored to a different part of the brain where a person is able to not have the same level of disturbance going forward. So when I see a particular color or I drive by a particular area, I don't have the same disturbance level. It can sound a little odd or bizarre, almost voodoo-like, but it is incredible and it really does work. And I think one of the things that is so unique about EMDR is every therapist who is trained has to go through it themselves. So we have an understanding. Yeah, it's very different from some other therapies. And of all the clients that I work with in my practice, I really see the first responders, they move so quickly through this treatment and they're really grateful. Most people do not recognize that our first responders, you know, it's not only the physical danger that they experience, it's the mental and the mm-hmm. emotional toll mm-hmm. that the job takes.
Yeah.
You know, and walk in their shoes. The general public really just doesn't understand the impact of that.
You're completely correct. You're absolutely 110% correct about that, because, you know, sometimes we do think about how, you know, like I look at what police officers have gone through, like just in the last year.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. you know, and a lot of times, you know, you'll hear police say, like, you know, we risk our lives every day. And immediately people will say, I know people who have, you know, been police officers for 15 years and they've never been shot at. Well, first of all, then you're very lucky. But second of all, it's not just about their physical ailments. In fact, sometimes I would say the mental is almost worse because they go through that more. You know, see and they hear and they talk to so many yeah. traumatic incidents that those things take a toll. And I think that the work mm-hmm. you guys do is incredible. And I just want to let people know some of the other services that are offered through the Fairfield County Trauma Response Team include pro bono trauma education trainings for first responder mm-hmm. organizations, local disaster response, public safety peer and spouse support groups, which is amazing as well, statewide referral to vetted EMDR therapists. The list kind of goes on. And I just think what you guys do, it's incredible. And the fact that you've been around since 2011, I applaud you and the work you're doing. Dawn, how can people donate today, tomorrow, next week, whenever they feel that they have the money to be able to support you guys and be able to help out in some way? You know, how do they, first of all, donate? How do they learn more if they themselves maybe think this might be good for them? You know, how do they contact you guys?
Yep, great question. So they simply go to our website, which is www.fctrt.org. So F as in Frank, C, T as in trauma, fctrt.org. And they can, there's a donate button right there. And our website, they can certainly read about us. They can call us for more information if they want to speak to a live voice. We are more than happy to talk with them about our mission and currently our work with, we've moved on to working with healthcare workers as well, expanding that because we know those folks are really, really, really struggling right now.
Mm-hmm. No question about it. Dawn, thank you so much for taking the time to talk this morning. I really appreciate it. I'd love to have you back on the show sometime.
Absolutely. Thank you, Melissa, and you be well.
Thank you, Dawn. You too.